Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Might be a short show this evening, but I thought I would start out reading something from the Goblet of Truth that a listener sent me. I think I'll go back a couple more lines. This is pretty interesting stuff. Everything functions, therefore, according to the effects of the creational laws and recommendations which go through everything, and without which no causes and no effects can occur. If false teachings speak of heaven and hell and of God and devil, then this is fundamentally wrong, just as it is also wrong to talk of good and evil powers, because all energies and powers are neutral in their kind. So also the negative and the positive, which only bring forth a distinct event. When they are brought together, heaven and hell are not places, but rather conditions in yourself, which you create yourselves through ideas, thoughts, and feelings in your psyche. As are likewise the good and the evil, which you are willingly put into action out of your ideas, thoughts, feelings, and through your decisions. Therefore, also your energies and powers are neutral in you human beings of earth. In consequence, you yourselves turn them into good or evil. And indeed, through your ideas, thoughts, and feelings, as well as through your decisions and your volition. Fundamentally, the negative and the positive are in themselves each a complete oneness, just as they result in a complete oneness when united in a right wise, but in a wrong union they create terribleness. As for example, if you create evil out of your energies and powers through wrong ideas, thoughts, and feelings, as well as through wrong volition, there is only one negative, and that is complete in itself, and one positive that is complete in itself. And through the uniting of both poles, a complete oneness comes out once more, and this oneness is creation given through the laws and recommendations as creational energy and power, which constantly undulates through all the creational and is inseparably connected with the creation and all its created creations and with everything that has come into existence through it. The creational energy and the power resulting out of it can be found everywhere, in every drop of water, in the air, in the rocks and the stones, in every plant and in every life form. So there is nothing in which the energy and its power does not exist. And just as everything is flooded through by the creational energy and power, so also you human beings of earth are continuously streamed through by it as swinging waves out of the spirit energy of the creation through which the life ignites in you and nourishes it. Through your special constitution of your consciously working consciousness, you take in the streaming, neutral, positive, equalized creational energy and its power and pass it on through your ideas and thoughts as well as through the thereout resulting feelings, out of which then, according to your decisions and your volition, the activity arises, your actions and deeds, and depending on the kind of ideas, thoughts, and the therewith connected feelings, as well as the thereout resulting decisions, and the volition, you automatically use the neutral, positive, equalized energy and its power out of your consciousness in a negative or a positive, i.e., in an evil or a good wise. Therefore, you use the energy and its power according to your own sense and you yourselves fully decide what you, in absolute self-responsibility, want to do in the negative or the positive, in the evil or the good. This, however, is your greatest responsibility, which you must bear with your own free will as human beings. Anyway, very, very profound stuff from the Goblet of Truth. I need to get back into this book. I'm going to talk a little bit about just kind of an overview of things in terms of the Meyer case. Billy, his contacts began in 1945 when a man named Spoth landed a silvery pear-shaped spacecraft in Hinterschmidt-Ruti, Switzerland. And this occurred in about 1945. Billy was about 5 years old. Spoth took him up into his ship and taught him about his previous lives and told him that he had been the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And then in this lifetime, he would also be a teacher and a prophet, and he would teach the creational natural laws. And just to name a few of them, we have the law of love, which is the fundamental creational natural law. We have the law of abundance and prosperity, which I guess is required that you follow the other creational natural laws to have abundance and prosperity. Another creational natural law is the law of striving. Everything that lives must strive. Our happiness depends on our striving. Law of harmony, which tells us that we need to have a neutral, positive, bipolar structure in our thinking. And there's a bipolar structure in everything that exists, a positive and a negative. So in order to think neutral, positive, we have to go through the following test. Tell yourself, I am confident, I am optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm thankful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm in harmony. That's the kind of thinking that we want to have. This was the beginnings of the spiritual teachings that Billy started to learn from Spoth. Billy met with Spoth for about 11 years, and then his contacts picked up with a woman named Askett in about 1953. They first went under the Great Pyramid together and saw the headquarters of the Giza Intelligences. And there Billy learned about this extraterrestrial group that had been trying to control the Earth through religions for thousands of years. Their next trip together, Askett and Billy went back to the 13th century, where he got to see the Earth in its ideal state. We only had a population at that time somewhere between 500 million and a billion. There were gigantic forests everywhere, teeming wildlife, very high oxygen content in our atmosphere. It was truly an ideal situation, which we could have now if we would follow the creational natural law related to population, that a planet our size really should only support about 540 million, something like that. The next trip that Billy took with Askett was back to the time of Emmanuel, and Billy got to meet one of his former personalities who was teaching the creational natural laws back in Israel some 2,000 years ago. And then finally, Askett and Billy met together at the Ashoka Ashram in India, where Billy was studying the religions of the world. After that, Billy had about 11 years of a normal life. He married a Greek woman named Calliope. They went to Hinterschmid Ruti, Switzerland. They had three children, one of which wasn't Billy's. Billy's wife wasn't faithful, and she turned against him and slandered him very much. But Svoth told Billy that this would happen. So since a young boy, he knew that this, in fact, would probably be the case. For about 11 years, he lived a normal life with no contacts, but he did a lot of studying on his own. In 1975 were his first contacts with Semyase, and she would land her beam ship right out in northern Switzerland, out in the open, in the sunshine. And Billy would sit down and converse with her. But they had to be more subtle as more and more people learned about these contacts. People started coming from all over the world to see these amazing ships. For one thing, Billy took about 1,400 photographs of her craft as well as films. Billy learned the spiritual teachings from Semyase, and he learned much about ancient history from her. Right around, I think it was 1978, when Billy and Semyase were together meeting in the Figu headquarters there, one of the other people at Figu, a man named Jacobus, walked in on them, which had a tremendous impact on Semyase. She fell and hit her head and beamed herself back to her ship. The Pleiaren are very sensitive to our negative thought patterns. Our vibrations are very, very repulsive to them, and to the point that it's almost like being hit physically when they come into our thought vibrations. So they have to wear a special technology when they're around typical Earth humans to protect them. Now, Billy's a little different because of the age of his spirit form. But in any sense, the contacts were cut short at that time. Even though she seemed to get better for a while, she eventually had to go for kind of a long-term therapy in the Tao universe. But before that, Billy had got to travel in Semyase's beam ship. And they went to the planet Mercury. They went to Venus. And Semyase said Venus was a planet in the beginning stages of life. They went to the Earth, where they saw the Apollo-Soyuz hookup. They went to Mars. They went to Saturn, I believe. But eventually they went to Jupiter, where the great mothership was waiting. Semyase steered her ship into an opening in the mothership and landed inside, and Semyase and Billy got to go to the bridge of this tremendous ship and meet Ptah, who was the commander of the mothership. Now, they started to do these hyper jumps from star to star to star. Each one of these hyper leaps was longer than the one before it. And Billy got to feel what it's like in the eternal state, where we are united with creation. And it was very moving for him, something that impacted him for his whole life. And eventually, the trip ended where Billy got to see his second mentor, Asket, again. So this is the kind of a quick overview of Billy's contacts. For the past 20, 30 years or so, he's met mostly with Ptah and Quetzal. And Quetzal was the commander of a lot of the forces that were in our solar system for quite some time. Now, I wanted to look into the future and what the Meyer material talks about in terms of our future. One of the things that we're seeing fulfilled right now are all of these tremendous hurricanes, and we've seen, what is it, Hurricane Irma. These are part of the dangers of the third millennium, and Hurricane Harvey was the first hurricane that hit us August 27th. It was a Category 4 hurricane, and it made landfall in the United States. It had 110 mile per hour winds with gusts up to 140 miles per hour. More, I think about 50 inches of rain was dumped into Texas, and for a while there were about 300,000 people without power, but the largest damage was done by the rainfall. Now on September 6th, we were hit by Hurricane Irma. And it was a Category 5 hurricane, and the storm had gusts up to 185 mile per hour winds. Mandatory evacuations occurred in Florida. At one point, as many as 650,000 people were evacuated. And this was one of the strongest hurricanes ever recorded in the Atlantic Basin and the Gulf of Mexico. Hurricane Irma, I believe, caused as many as 7 million people to lose power in Florida. Now, since then, right around September 19th, Hurricane Maria devastated Puerto Rico, and it had wind speeds near 160 miles per hour, and they say that all of Puerto Rico may be without power for as long as 6 months. Also, the country of Dominica was also hit very hard by this hurricane. Now, I'm just giving a very, very high level view of this information. But I thought it might be a little interesting to look at a few more of the prophecies in general, as well as specifically that deals with hurricanes. And there's an article called The Overpopulation Bomb, which is very interesting. If you read it, it's out on the Future Mankind site. It says, every second six humans are born. This was information from 1994. Every minute, 360 humans. Every hour, 21,000 humans are born. That's about 189 million a year. And I believe this article talks about hurricanes. It says, concurrently, an artificially created greenhouse effect generated by man is developing on a global scale that threatens life on Earth with a total climactic collapse. Every type of unnatural catastrophe in nature directly results also from human destruction mania. Meteorologists are today registering an increase in natural disasters such as tropical hurricanes and cyclones and abnormal droughts and floods. There's one contact report, I think it's 136, that said, all of the Earth will become flood prone in the third millennium, which we're in now. It says even earthquakes and volcanic eruptions are part of this scenario, although scientists continue to maintain that these events are purely natural, which is not consistent with the truth. Indeed, every one of these events has not been a totally natural occurrence in the customary natural extent for a long time. Now, one of the things that I found in my own research is that the forests moderate the weather. They have a low albedo in the winter, meaning that snow and ice reflect a lot more heat back than trees do. So the trees hold on to a little bit of the warmth in the winter, and they cool the air in the summer by shade. So they act as a kind of a moderator of our weather. They keep the temperatures kind of a middle of the road, because it's the hot and cold air clashing that creates these giant storms. Let me continue in this article. It says, man is a part of the earth, but he fails to understand the way of life. In his view, not every human being is identical to the other. And if one belongs to another color, another race, or variety, or that person is simply a stranger, he will not be accepted, but is disregarded, debased, and persecuted. Power-hungry and powerful individuals grab land and possessions from the helpless. And man is dealing likewise with his native land, the earth. He treats the earth as a complete stranger. And listen to this. This is so important. Lives strictly for his own benefit and not for harmony between earth and all life on it. He creeps in like a thief in the night as a stranger and robs the earth of whatever he relishes. Or conversely, he destroys and annihilates everything on the planet as he pleases. He fails to live in harmony with the planet, his own Mother Earth, and instead, he has become her enemy. Immediately upon conquering and subduing one part of her, he moves on to effect the same destruction elsewhere. Wow, isn't that the truth? Okay, I am going to make a few adjustments to my microphones and stuff, and we're going to play some clips on Hurricane Maria, which has devastated Puerto Rico. So I'm going to play through some clips pretty quickly here, and then we'll move on to more prophetic stuff.
From the building across from me, you know, all of the doors are shaking. Yes, the people in the hotel where we are right now have actually been moved to the casino, Robin. They moved sofas in there, and these many of them are tourists. Some of them are locals that have come here to seek shelter, but most of them are tourists. And many wondering what is going to happen next year as Maria makes her way in. I got to tell you, we've got quite a few first responders here as well. And as I talked to them and asked them if they had ever seen anything like it, they say no. They are already getting calls for help, but it is too dangerous for them to get out.
The first pictures now coming in from Puerto Rico after taking a direct hit. Hurricane Maria slamming into the island, and as you heard, one official saying the island is destroyed. Maria is the first Category 4 to hit there in nearly a century. 150-mile-an-hour winds ripping buildings apart, knocking out power everywhere. All of the electricity is out tonight. People ordered to stay inside until at least tomorrow amid fears of more massive flooding to come. And the satellite image tonight showing Maria's massive size dwarfing the island, no part of it was spared. ABC's Victor Akendo leading us off from San Juan tonight.
Tonight, Maria's direct hit, devastating Puerto Rico. The first Category 4 storm to strike Puerto Rico in 85 years, slamming ashore around sunrise.
We are back here on the northern side of San Juan here. I can only imagine what went down when this thing made landfall in the southeast corner of this island. Obviously, the eye getting closer and closer to us, that eye wall now scraping the northern beaches there.
Roofs peeled from buildings, debris flying, structures collapsing. Up to 30 inches of rain in some areas, engulfing whole neighborhoods. Michelle Torres using everything she can to keep the water out.
The wind howls and screeches, the doors rattle.
We are outside of San Juan in the town of Guaynabo. It was hit very hard. A lot of destruction to homes, down trees and power lines as well. And now they're dealing with this, flooding. In every direction. The emergency management director saying the entire island is destroyed. Many of these homes not built to withstand any hurricane, let alone a Category 4.
Well, the hurricane came and took my house.
Is it all wind damage? Is that what happened here?
Wind damage.
Hospitals damaged, running on generator power. We're standing on one of the busiest thoroughfares in all of San Juan, Puerto Rico, the John F. Kennedy Expressway. Not a single car in sight. We're the only ones out here. Emergency management now confirms 100%.
If you've been a subscriber for a while, you know I'm not a half-cocked alarm of liberty that no one, under any circumstances, can legitimately force onto another person. And as you might guess, in regular CNN doublespeak style, after declaring this to be mandatory, the reporter contradicts himself and says the word mandatory is used only to express the real urgency.
It is mandatory, but that is to express the real urgency and the need for you to get out.
Then he lies, saying they can't physically go in and force people from their homes.
But they cannot physically go in and force people from their homes. Well, this is about as close as they can come to doing that.
Tell that to the many victims of martial law during Hurricane Katrina. I noticed during this segment, the reporter took his earpiece out so he could talk about how it's mandatory for these residents to leave. I don't know what dictionary this guy's using, but mandatory means mandatory. You don't have a choice. Mandatory does not mean optional. When he starts to explain that police can't force people out of their homes, you can see that the earpiece is back in. So it looks like somebody may have told him to add that last piece to his story to make it sound like it wasn't so bad. Then we have...
And I'd like to point out that we're now in our fourth continuous week of hurricane response operations after Harvey, Irma, and now Maria. Certainly the initial reports and the news photos from Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands show widespread and extensive damage. And we've even seen that at some of our own Coast Guard units in St. Thomas, St. Croix, and in San Juan, Puerto Rico as well. Prior to the storm, the Coast Guard sheltered some of its assets and personnel and moved some cutters out of the path of the storm. But we've already returned to operations and had planes in the air and cutters in the water in the vicinity of Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands today, including conducting two SAR cases with the search and rescue cases with the assistance of some great partners.
Admiral, is there anything that can be done by the Coast Guard or any other government agencies with respect to Puerto Rico getting power? You know, again, we never know how much we take power for granted, but considering that the island has a complete blackout, the panic has to be at record levels.
So the Coast Guard's role in assisting in the restoration of power consists primarily of us restoring the ports through which the fuel for power plants flow. And many of those ports are on the eastern and southern coast of Puerto Rico, bringing in coal, oil, and natural gas. And so,
David Begno joins us now from San Juan. David, we are now on the other side of this massive storm. I can see that people are out and about behind you. They're on the streets. There's some drivers on the road, but I know it's bad. Tell me about the aftermath.
There was a dusk to dawn curfew, so now that the curfew's over, people are out and about milling around, many of them surveying the damage themselves. The only noise we hear right now in San Juan is coming from generators. That's the only lifeline these people have. Power is cut. There's no way to communicate. You've got folks who are standing in front of this Starbucks. Luckily, Anne-Marie, one of the only ways people can reach relatives, let's say on the mainland, to let them know they're okay, is by coming to a Starbucks, which had its windows blown out and the top portion of the sign torn off, and they get on Wi-Fi, and that's how they're able to let people know that they're okay. But we have people who are working with us on our crew here in Puerto Rico who haven't been able to reach their family members on the island to let them know they're okay or to make sure the family members are okay. Here's what I can tell you. It is a dire situation, and we're hearing it from, in fact, some of the security guards who are police officers working on our team here on the ground.
Lester, Maria's death toll is now up to 18 across the Caribbean, including one death here in Puerto Rico. But the true extent of the damage is not yet known. Here in San Juan, many roads are impassable and communication systems are down, which means it could take quite a while to get a handle on the full scope of Maria's destruction. Tonight, in the wake of Hurricane Maria, parts of Puerto Rico are desperate. Residents forced to wade through waist-high water to safety. Many areas unreachable by land or by phone, and virtually the entire U.S. territory is without power. Search and rescue operations from multiple agencies in Puerto Rico and the U.S. mainland now underway. Dozens of families rescued during the early morning with just flashlights to guide them in the San Juan community. Today, we rode along with the National Guard and Governor Ricardo Rosselló, who hasn't been able to communicate not just with mayors in some parts of the island, but even his own parents outside San Juan.
Everybody has felt the pain and the anxiety of not speaking to loved ones.
Maria's path of destruction is relentless, devastating the Dominican Republic overnight. Dangerous storm surge and damaging winds that rip roofs off homes. New video out of St. Croix today shows the extent of the destruction there.
You got big trees, big mahogany trees that were rooted out.
And in hard-hit Dominica, officials confirmed at least 15 people died from the storm.
Well, a terrifying situation unfolding in Puerto Rico tonight. As many as 70,000 people are being evacuated because a dam is failing. It's in the northwest part of the island, and as you can see here, there is a valley that is beyond the Guadajaca Dam. That 90-year-old dam is now failing, and there's fear that anyone left behind downstream could be killed.
The situation in Puerto Rico is dire. More than 15 inches of rain falling on the mountains surrounding this dam, swelling the reservoir behind it. The Weather Service urging people to move to higher ground, calling it extremely dangerous, life-threatening. Buses are evacuating people as the water moves in. As officials are scrambling there, the rest of the island dealing with no power, no gas, widespread flooding, and a crumbling infrastructure.
What do you suggest we do?
The mayor of San Juan, Carmen Yulin Cruz, wading through the hardest hit streets of her city, literally going door to door.
This is the area called Ocean Park. It's got a little bit too much ocean right now.
All around her, water and devastation. Reservoirs for clean drinking water have been depleted. Fuel very quickly running out. Already, residents are trying to cope without power. Outdated and fragile, most of Puerto Rico's power lines are above ground. No match for Maria. Some families resorted to living outside by flashlight. Ricardo Ramos.
Part of the island. We understand local engineers reportedly found a crack in this dam, causing them so much concern that they brought in buses to try to evacuate those that cannot evacuate themselves. We understand those ongoing evacuations are continuing at this hour. And as if this wasn't bad enough, it was earlier today between about 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. that this community was just pounded with heavy rain, lightning, and thunder. It was 3 days ago that Hurricane Maria made landfall here in Puerto Rico, and this storm system was so big that here we are nearly 3 days later, and we're still dealing with severe weather conditions. It was just a day or so ago that our team was able to get out into the community, and what we saw was just catastrophic damage to the infrastructure, gas stations underwater, communication down, cell towers down. The local mayor told me that she is trying to set a tone for her residents to deal with the lack of modern life, expecting them to be without power for up to 6 months. Aaron?
Thank you very much, Nick Valencia. And joining me now on the phone is the Puerto Rican Secretary of State, Luis Gerardo Rivera Marin. Secretary, thank you so very much. I mean, it is hard to comprehend what we're hearing here. 6 months without power. You are talking about living without modern life and outside of modern life. I know.
Well, this is one of the things that Billy has said in some of the prophecies, that we could end up going back to very harsh, very primitive times because of what's going to happen in the third millennium. The third millennium is the time we're in now, the time of transition, where the Earth finally learns that the Maya information is correct and that we have much to change in the way we think and the way we live. Let me continue on. I want to give a quick overview of some of the prophecies. The collapse of the U.S. starts around 2020, and we will have two civil wars, one following the other. This will split the U.S. into five different regions or different countries. We will have extensive fires in the west and hurricanes on the coasts, as we said. We've already heard and seen the destruction of the World Trade Center. We will have the earthquake in San Francisco, which wipes out San Francisco. We recently saw the earthquakes in Mexico. There will be the collapse of religion, particularly the Catholic Church will collapse. We will also see the rise of the robot people, or the rise of the semi-humans, which are the human beings that will be crossed with pigs. And give me a second, and I will try to find this in Contact 251. This will cause great problems 85 years later, when the now powerful scientists begin to play God as they had done in earliest times. By the way, this is Contact Report 251. And they will create new hybrids between humans and animals through genetic alterations. These new semi-humans will declare their solidarity with the robotic humans. But before this transpires, another 80 years will pass after the creation of the robotic humans, as I mentioned earlier. With the creation of robotic humans, intelligent, biologic, electronic, machine-like robots will be constructed. A gigantic space station will be built, upon which a vast number of humans will live. And the station will travel in its own orbit around the sun. And I also wanted to review something that I had talked about earlier. More about these semi-humans. And another war on Earth will ensue, for terrestrials have failed in their attempt to become peace-loving and intelligent. The future will hold nothing positive pertaining to scientists, because they will have begun to perform their first genetic manipulations of humans and animals by this time, and will be creating the so-called semi-humans, whom they will produce by crossing humans with pigs and then train them as fighting machines. These entities will be sent into war and perform a variety of tasks in space. So we'll have the genetic mixing of humans and pigs, and these living beings will be used for war, and they'll be used for piloting spacecraft. And then we also have the rise of the robot humans, where people have their arms and legs removed and their nerves attached to devices. Eventually, there will be total devastation in North America. It will be caused by biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons will be released. Eventually, though, we will get the correction of our genetic defect. Right now, all the Earth humans have a shortened lifespan and an increased aggression. We will correct that genetic defect, which was caused by the people from the Sirius system that genetically engineered us for the shortened lifespans and the propensity towards war. We will settle on Mars, and we will have wars with the Mars colonies. We will develop crafts that will go way beyond light speed. We will also create an artificial sun in our future. We will bring back a dangerous life form from space that's called the wolf. And we discover the fact that there were ancient civilizations on Mars. And we discover our origins in the Sirius system. We will also have contacts with other civilizations on other worlds. Eventually, the beauty of the Earth will be restored. The Meyer teachings will gain worldwide acceptance. Our thousand-year lifespans will come back, and our progeny will leave the Earth and settle on other worlds, where there will be great prosperity on these other worlds. This is just a super high-level overview of some future events. And I wanted to talk a little bit about Contact 424 that talks about the Giza intelligences. And this is Patah speaking to Billy in Contact 424. The Giza intelligences transposed via teleprojection, apparent realities with visionary experiences into a few others like Dan Fry and Schmidt, who then considered these as reality. Many others, however, were and still are only liars and deceivers with alleged contacts that never took place and are not taking place. What has to be said in respect to the married couple Hill, Barney and Betty Hill, and others who were allegedly abducted or even medically harmed, or who supposedly had implants implanted, and who under hypnosis exposed these occurrences, that these occurrences have never happened, are nothing but illusions, imagination, delusion, and deliberate lies, as well as schizophrenic, illusory products and disturbances of consciousnesses brought forth through the interference of electromagnetic fields on the earth, through which unrealities, unreal happenings, as well as unreal memories and unreal experiences are caused, but also unreal pain, fear, and unreal perceptions, and so forth. The disrupted electromagnetic fields of the earth have been the cause of the untrue memories of the hills. Now, I thought in another contact report, it said that that was a real case of contact. So I'm amazed by this. All these factors will become or could be knowingly or unknowingly manipulated, which means that the hypnotized describe the unreal happenings and unrealities, etc., as reality. And it goes on here. It is very, very, very interesting. Indeed, a never-ending bit of incredible material in the Meyer case. So, let me shift gears a little bit. I think it would be very, very good to do that. Let's talk a little bit about the Way to Live book, Die Art zu Leben, finished in January 8, 1997. It was translated by Vivian Legge and Dyson Devine. This is one of Billy's very important books. And we've been talking about the evolution code in these books, which is in the German, and I need to get more involved in the German. One of the things we've been studying is the fulfillment of your duty to yourself, which means to be honest and benevolent, and don't turn your back on yourself. Do not have feelings of inferiority. Have no bitterness, no self-abuse, no chastisement of yourself. Be gentle to yourself. No flattery of yourself. Take care of your body. Take care of your mind and challenge your body and your mind. Don't be devoted to your passions, your lusts, or your addictions. Use your intelligence. Use your rational logic, or you will have no enjoyment in the fulfillment of your responsibility. The other important information that this book tells us, another great point which it brings up, is the law of striving. And it says, striving is the power of the spiritual as well as the physical. And striving is an incontrovertible creational law. In order to reach through incessant evolution that which is higher and absolutely fully developed, only happiness in life comes from striving. The only real lasting self-satisfaction is from striving. Put yourself second if you have to, and go for the striving. Striving is the great and enormous power. Striving is the law of all evolution and of all absolutely full development. Striving is the power. Striving is the power of your life, and it is the sense you have of progress. If striving is absent in some life form, then the power of progress extinguishes, and thereby the sense of life. That's one thing I've noticed is when I'm not striving the way I should be, my sense of life goes away. If a human being loses his or her striving, then he or she also loses the sense of life. If the human being can no longer strive for anything at all, then in himself / herself, he or she feels with deadly might that he or she is no longer any use to anything. So, the power of striving is the power of life. Without striving, no life. Without life, no striving. That's a good saying for you. Without striving, no life. Without life, no striving. So this is a creational natural law. The other important thing to remember is that the power of your thoughts does not come from yourself. The power of that the thinking uses as impetus does not stem from the human being himself or herself. It streams in the spirit and from there into the consciousness, coming out of the unmeasured expanses of space of the universe. So the power of your thoughts is not powered by any power in you, but from the universe itself, from creation. That's where the power of your thoughts come from. It stems from the tremendous wealth of spirit of the life of the creation, which is responsible for life in the universe. And that's where the power of our thought comes in. This is a very important thing, the power of our thinking. It is the nature of thoughts by their might alone. Everything conceivable can be brought into fruition. So you need to tell yourself, I am confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm thankful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm in harmony. Because you are the master of your own destiny. You are not the victim of circumstances. Good thoughts lead to good feelings lead to good habits. And good habits lead to good circumstances in your life. You are the master of your own destiny. I want to read a few things again. And I believe the word assiduousness means perseverance, if I remember correctly. So this comes from page 166 in The Might of Thoughts, another book written by Billy. He or she is assiduous in adding one effort to the next one, one realization and one strength to another. If he or she forms and expands his or her patience and builds up a willingness for real modesty, which counters megalomania and every excessiveness, and creates the cognition that no human being ever learns all there is to know. Truthfully, every human being has time to learn in each of his or her lifetimes and to never stop doing so because it is his or her obligation, task, and sense of life to develop and therefore to evolve such that his or her spirit form evolutively climbs to such heights that one day it can become one with creation itself. That is to say, it can unite with creation. Well, I want to thank you for listening this evening. We're going to cut the show a little short tonight, give myself a little bit of break and be my own best friend and perform my duty to myself. Hope you've enjoyed the show. I've enjoyed bringing it to you. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great evening.